Good afternoon. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Benzinga's Cannabis Insider. We have the international man of mystery, the curly-headed Adonis, the man himself, Javier Haas, the man who started it all here at Benzinga Cannabis. What up, brother?
Doing great. What about you, Mr. Elliot Lane, host of Benzinga Cannabis Daily?
You know, yes. I'm feeling good. Oh, you're giving me a real intro. Oh, thank you.
Just
appreciate
that.
You. I gotta admit, I haven't done Cannabis Daily in a hot segundo. I think I might start it again early next year, right? Well, we'll get through the end of the year. I missed all the September news. Whatever. It is what it is. But we were busy putting on an event. We have two more events coming up in fintech and crypto that we're working on right now in New York City in mid-November. If you're in the city and you're interested in Web3, you're interested in blockchain, you're interested in capital markets at all, got to be there, convene, just head to BZ Awards or BZ-crypto.com, each of them, just grab a ticket, join us. It's pretty cheap to meet BlackRock, State Street, all these wonderful, cool people that we work with here at Benzinga. It's going to be a fun time. But that said, Javier Haas, let's get going. Malia Hang, get us started. What up again? All right, Javier. So I'm looking at the news, man. It really feels like the big news right now is Germany. Yes, you know, looking at the stocks that are moving on our website, I see Flora Growth is up with, you know, they had that acquisition of Franchise Global that put them in just a massive amount of German footprints there. I see Village Farms is up. I see Intercure is up. But, I think Germany news is really moving some stocks right now.
Indeed. I mean, here's what's going on, right? So as many of our viewers and listeners know, Germany has been discussing adult use cannabis legalization for a while. But I don't know if that is the right headline.
They were going to deliberate on Wednesday, right? Yeah. They did deliberate already, right? So now that we've heard pros debates, we've heard con debates, right?
Exactly.
Right. So that's where we are now.
So they debated this yesterday, right? There's a few people on board with the current proposal, which, as a reminder, is a scaled back version of what they wanted to do originally, for adult use. After Germany met with the EU, they decided to scale back a little bit on their adult use legalization plan. And now they're debating it, right? On the one hand, you have the Social Democratic Party that is very much in favor. But then you have, certain conservative groups that are opposing this, calling the move, a move in the wrong direction. They think it will incentivize marijuana use. Right. So it's pretty interesting. the right wing populist party is actually submitted a proposal, titled something like abandon the legalization of cannabis and institute a scientific benefit assessment of medical cannabis analogous to a pharmaceutical law. Germans are very wordy. Even their laws are like this long in terms of titles.
Well, it's not like our laws are short. But I will say, it's exciting, right? We saw Bloomwell Group. They're releasing some positive sentiment about this, and it looks like the markets are reacting positively too. So keep an eye on it. Obviously, the major stocks to watch, I think Curaleaf, Tilray, Flora Growth Corp are probably all going to be pretty significant winners, but there are some major companies over there that, I think are going to be the true winners of the market, thinking the Dimecans, thinking the Sanity Groups, Bloomwell. These companies are going to be massive global players starting with Germany. Sanity Group, run by Christian from Atai Life Sciences. Billionaire, just amazing entrepreneur. Engelmeyer, thank you. I almost said Christian Baumgartner. He used to work for us. But it's exciting. What's happening in Germany, hopefully that opens up some European love to the plant. Javier, what else is on your mind, man? We have a couple interviews today, so not going to be too long on news. We're going to talk to a major real estate investment trust, a couple gents who are just doing it right over there. We're going to talk to an up-and-coming player in the Northeast, Union Chill. Incredibly excited about both of these interviews. But before we get to it, what's on your mind today, brother?
We can do quick headlines. First off, Cresco Labs, CRLBF on the OTCQX, they unlocked $32 million in non-dilutive capital through license store sale in Arizona for $6.5 million, a mortgage on a New York property for $25 million at an interest rate of 8.4%. Pretty interesting stuff. Also, Harvard University is creating a study of psychedelics in society and culture department. And it was backed by a $16 million gift from former Tesla employee, Antonio Gracias. Very interesting stuff as well. You know, Harvard has been instrumental to studying cannabis throughout the years. And I'm very excited personally to see them getting to psychedelics. And our good friends at Verano Holdings, VRNOF on the OTCQX, started trading on the NEO exchange as well up in Canada.
SIBO Canada. Yeah, I think it. Yeah. Is it still NEO? Like, I thought it's SIBO Canada.
I call it NEO.
I know it's NEO for ease of us. Like,
yeah, futures. I don't want to mess with that just in case. Compliance wise,
fair.
Say NEO because CBOE is a futures exchange, as far as I know. We visited the exchange in a few occasions and in Chicago. We even got to ring the bell. Were you there that day? Well,
I wasn't. I had a baby 5 days before that.
Oh,
remember?
Right.
Yeah. I have a one-year-old. She keeps me straight. She's amazing. But I will say this, y'all, SIBO did wonders for Columbia Care, now the cannabis company. They really, I think, did well internationally, opening up institutional capital to them. You know, obviously they still have a lot of restrictions on what they can do, but you know, I think it's a great move from Verano. And I think honestly, it will make people truly deliberate the best move. You know, thinking of Curaleaf, looking at the TSX, and thinking of these other companies who, you know, now since TerrAscend did it, like, oh, we all got to do it. But Verano took a different step. I think that is better for the space.
Listing a decent number of cannabis companies over the years, right? As have all Canadian exchanges. CSC has been super friendly to cannabis.
CSC is probably the most friendly exchange, period.
Yeah. And yeah, for sure.
But CSC, I feel like, works for their companies. Keep going.
There was a time when the CSC was, you know, basically driving all of its growth, or most of its growth from cannabis listings. I remember a few years ago chatting with Barrington Miller, for instance, and him saying, you know, the biggest number of IPOs this year were cannabis related. Of course, that has decelerated since. But at the same time, it's still a very viable option, especially because these are exchanges that are available through most mainstream or a bunch of mainstream brokerages, whereas OTC, you know, over-the-counter stocks on the OTC markets are not always readily available or easy to buy and sell, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, not to shift subjects too quickly, but I'll make sure I get to it. I'm really excited about Ohio. I think the potential there for another phenomenal market, you know, in the eastern part of the U.S. is incredibly exciting. And I'm excited for Body and Mind. I'm excited for the companies there for Standard Wellness. You know, there's some legitimate companies in that state who are going to immediately benefit. But what do you think is going to happen? Right now, it's looking positive, Javi. It's looking positive. But we saw the GOP come in and just friggin' stomp on Arkansas right at the end there. So hoping that doesn't happen to
know. Our cannabis editor, Maureen Meehan, is from Ohio, lives in Ohio, and has been following every development very closely. Mm-hmm. And you know, she seems pretty optimistic about the potential result here. Early voting is already open, and we've seen pretty encouraging numbers so far. So
great,
we'll see.
Wonderful.
One month away.
Javi, let's start talking about some debt. You want to talk about some debt? I want to talk about some debt.
As long as, as I am not the one in debt.
Hey, only a 15% annum. No, I'm just kidding. But that being said, y'all, please welcome Chris Reese and Kyle Schoenfeld from MJ REIT and Rainbow Realty Group. Y'all, you ready to talk about some debt?
There they are. Yes.
Hey, what up? Chris and Kyle, how's it going, friends? You guys having a good weekend. I have to mention, I didn't do the lead-in for this, but y'all just recently won an award. Right, Chris? Hey,
there it is. I was gonna give some props. Yeah, best read of 23. Always love that.
Yeah,
I went to their website. It's on their homepage. You go to the MJ REIT website, and the first thing that pops up is that Benzinga Award. It's like, I love that.
That award was up about 6 hours after we received it.
I love that, man. Okay, next award is for best Benzinga supporter.
So, Chris and Kyle, you know, I guess a question to both of you. You know, what is the relationship between MJ REIT and Rainbow Realty Group, right? Because these are two separate firms in the eyes of people who are looking at websites. But talk to us a little bit about how you all work in tandem.
Yeah, absolutely. And so MJ REIT is the structure of the fund itself. When I started MJ REIT, I didn't have the experience or diligence or contacts in the marketplace. And I looked at a number of different managers, and by far the best manager in the marketplace for allocation of capital and underwriting deals with a conservative multi-decade approach, hands down, was were the crew over at Rainbow. So Rainbow officially serves as the sub-manager on MJ REIT. So they are responsible and have discretion over allocating capital to individual companies.
Phenomenal. And Kyle, did you just say decades? That's right. Right? But not decades in the cannabis space. Give us a little history of your all's experience.
For my family, it's been a decade now. We were one of the original investors in New Jersey when it was not for profit. But Chris laid it out pretty well, right? Like Rainbow has been, we've been a real estate company for about 65 years, and we've been specifically focused on the real estate industry, Rainbow, financing real estate therein for the last 6 years. And as everybody knows who's listening to this podcast, capital in this industry is the hardest thing to come by. That's why Rainbow has a business in the first place. We sort of serve as a bank. But that's why we partnered with MJ REIT. Chris and his team at MJ REIT, they built the form of our vehicle itself, which is a non-traded REIT. It's different than the way Rainbow is structured. And Chris is really our fundraising partner in addition to structuring. So as you said, Chris helps us raise the capital and put the entity itself together. And Chris runs the day-to-day of MJ REIT. And we do the investing itself. We invest, with MJ REIT and Rainbow Realty Funds directly in the exact same deals. And we do two things. We mortgage real estate, just for the cannabis industry. And we buy real estate and lease it back just for the cannabis industry in the U.S. We've been doing it for 6 years in Rainbow. We've been doing it with Chris at MJ REIT for over a year.
Yeah, at the end of this month too, it's exciting. So we'll have 14 months of track record. So every month that goes by is just another month of providing some solid performance for our investors.
I'm very curious, Chris, right? Like since Kyle just mentioned, right, this is a domestic focused REIT, but a lot of your your experience is international, right? From your time at Vanguard and are you looking to raise capital abroad, right? Do you have an important number? Just moving all around. Do you have an important number of international investors interested in U.S. Capital markets and U.S. real estate markets for cannabis?
Yeah, so the structure allows for foreign investors. So we certainly can accept that capital and they can become an investor in the fund overall. From a deal allocation standpoint, there's so much to do here in the States. We're not looking necessarily outside of the country, at least at this stage. I mean, maybe that's a secondary product that we think about as Europe continues to expand. You just mentioned Germany a little while ago. I mean, there's some opportunity as we get into the market further down. But right now we're focused on deploying capital in the U.S. But certainly if you're an outside investor, a foreign investor, this is a potential investment for your portfolio.
And just to add to it, like Chris said, right? Like I think we welcome investors from anywhere in the world, basically. But look, we're doing the same thing that we've been doing really for a long time. We're just investing in real estate. Right now it happens to be in the cannabis industry because we think it's an interesting opportunity. But, you know, our underwriting committee, we're not familiar with international foreclosure law. And so it's, as Chris said, there's so much of a need, you know, here domestically that, that's keeping us quite busy. And it's frankly not our expertise. So. Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned the cannabis industry being an interesting opportunity for investors. From what I understand, MJ Reed is limited to only accredited or institutional investors at the time. And the minimum ticket is $25,000, which is not huge, but is not a number, you know, to scoff at, right? What would you tell, why do you think it's an interesting opportunity? And also, what is the safety profile of this, right? Because real estate has a backing in hard assets. It's not the same as investing in volatile cannabis stocks, but like what is the value prop for a regular investor?
Yeah, good question, Javier. Our biggest value prop is and how we generally fit into an investor's portfolios. We're a fixed income alternative because think about your own personal investments and focus on the debt side of the ledger. You know, you earned essentially zero for the last decade, and then you saw a big spike in rates, which if you did have any capital appreciation, that was wiped out because of the duration aspect. So the investors haven't had a suitable alternative in the fixed income space for a long, long time. And so our value prop is to go out and provide a stable asset that generates an attractive total return derived mostly through monthly income. And if we can get you a 10%+ all-in return net of the fees and expenses, and we can do that consistently over time, that's going to be a very attractive component of one's portfolio. But the cool aspect is that we appeal not just to people within the cannabis space, but really any investor in the United States that is accredited that maybe doesn't even have exposure to cannabis. And quite frankly, you know, we look at it as a real estate play first that is investing within this little area of the overall real estate space, which is in cannabis. So we take and raise capital and provide a good return for investors. And then on the flip side, we'll deploy that capital within the cannabis space, further enabling the industry to grow.
Now, on that very last point there, good segue here. And, you know, looking at this from an operator perspective, right, and looking at how it's been to operate the cannabis space for the past, we'll say 2 years, but, you know, really the whole time, right, with the battle against liquidity, battle for liquidity, however you want to put it. The rates in this space is not centric to any specific debt provider, but obviously they're pretty magnanimous compared to other industries. Why, right? Like, just to break it down in an elementary way, you know, why, and then when do we see that change to be a little bit more normalized?
You want to take that, Kyle?
Sure. I think sort of on a micro level, you know, as I was talking about with, you know, before, the reason we have this partnership really in the first place, it's hard to find capital for this industry. The fact that rates are where they are doesn't make it easier, right? You know, it used to be the case that, you know, you could generate a 9% return in Rainbow, and people thought, oh, that's, you know, that's higher than the 3 or 4% I can get somewhere else with a safe bond. So that's a 600 basis point spread, right? Nowadays, you know, if you can go make 6-ish% easily, investors want to make, you know, that much, they want to make that much more on an investment like ours. Point just being, if we can only raise capital that costs us 11-12%, right, then we sort of have to deploy that capital at a mid-teen rate in order to cover salaries and stuff for a business like us. Otherwise, you know, the business is not profitable. So it's the cost of capital flows up, you know, flows through the stack all the way, unfortunately, to the operator. And our portfolio is pretty much 100% unlevered. We have about 7% leverage on $150 million portfolio at Rainbow. On the one hand, it's nice because it makes our investments a little bit safer than traditional real estate. On the other hand, it forces us again to charge a bit of a higher rate, right? If we could go get leverage at 6%, we could charge 9% and we'd make a healthy spread. But given the way we're set up, you know, again, our cost of capital to our investors and the very limited debt that we've been able to get, it is what it is. Like, you know, you mentioned someone just got debt at 8.5%. That's hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And then, to be fair, it's Cresco. It's not like most companies out there are getting those rates.
Right.
You know, and do either of the two federal occurrences that we're looking at right now, SAFER or rescheduling, affect debt rates, or are those separate?
I think they both have an impact. I think SAFER would have a more direct impact. It obviously deals with banking. My reading is that it's more geared towards safety and having banks as depositories, but it would certainly open up more banks being willing to lend money to the industry, which would bring rates down. So I think that much is for sure. Descheduling or rescheduling, on the other hand, I think it's a similar thing. Like, yes, it will make some more institutions willing to invest in the space. Again, it's like the more capital that comes to the space, the lower the rates get. That's a very simple principle. I think rescheduling is almost better from where the lender sits, just because it's like, okay, now it's going to really help the health of the companies that go from barely breaking even or losing money because of the tax code will overnight go to making money. So it's a real credit enhancement to your tenant or your borrower. But I think it has maybe a less dramatic or a slower, you know, impact in terms of cash coming directly to the industry. I actually think that rescheduling would be better for the industry, but it doesn't necessarily mean more cash right away or lower rates. And look, I think I'm still holding out hope that both of these might come to fruition. So, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, and with any industry, right? When you get, as the industry matures and more capital comes in, you'll see a compression of rates. And to Kyle's point, we'll see the money that we're putting out in the marketplace, that'll ultimately come down over time. But interesting for the fund, and Kyle hit on the leverage aspect, the fund has zero leverage in it. So as rates come down and it's our ability to borrow and put a little bit of leverage on the portfolio should help stabilize and keep those rates higher for our investors.
You know, and I want to close it up, you know, since we're talking a lot about rates, what about interest rates? How would a potential, you know, we're in a context where many are expecting interest rates to continue to surge, right? Yeah. Okay. I see your face, maybe. Okay. If you have a different opinion, I want to hear that as well. But like, how does the interest rate affect both your investors and the people you're financing?
I make the face because it hurts me too on a personal level. And I think you're right. I think the reality is, you know, for some of the same reasons I mentioned earlier, it's like if rates stay flat or go up a little, then absent some of the, you know, legislative reform that we've spoken about, then the rates have to stay the same or maybe go up a little bit. I mean, I can't imagine it being different without some of the help, you know, that Elliot and I just spoke about. So,
And I think Javier as well. So when you look at the debt that we have in the portfolio, and then Kyle can speak on the rainbow front, not all of that is fixed, and there are variable rate positions as well. So as we see an increase in rates, you know, we want to ensure that the borrower is able to meet those interest obligations, but we've structured it to where as rates increase, so too will the interest that these borrowers are paying. So, you know, you want to protect the fund. You want your operators to be successful and be able to pay you. But we want to be able to capture that higher return for investors as well.
All right, gents, we are about to time, but I have one question. I would like to wrap up with something fun. What is your favorite cannabis format? We like some pre-rolls and flower. We chatted with Morgan Paxia, the man loves his vapes. Do you just like a good old edible at the end of the day? What are we doing? What are we consuming today?
You go first, Chris. This is easy for me.
Yeah, I was going to say it's easier for you. I don't know if I have a favorite format, right? I'll deflect on that one and let Kyle go through the ringer.
This won't be a popular opinion because you can hardly find it anywhere, but I like Moroccan or Lebanese style hash rolled up in a joint with a little tobacco. I like a smooth, mellow high.
It's not on the rise, deep, man.
You know,
it's on the rise.
Weed these days is too strong, even for someone like me. So I like something a little smoothie like that.
Amen. You know, I got to tell you, whenever I get a good cannabis seltzer, it's over. It's over. That's it for me. But you know, Kyle, I gotta try some of this. I'll be over your place later.
Oh, I got it.
All right, Chris, Kyle, been a pleasure. We're gonna catch up again. You know, I think down the road, once something happens, we gotta keep up with where debt lasts because companies need it. You know, companies need what you do. So we appreciate it. Thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you again down
the road. We're looking to deploy it. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys.
Big notes. We're looking to deploy. That is something that we rarely
listen. Yes. MJ REIT, Rainbow Realty Group, both phenomenal players in the space and been around for a minute. Brian, what is up? Thanks for tuning in. Tony Shore, bestie with the there's nothing that rhymes with bestie. Bestie with the resty, bestie with the I shouldn't do this on air. It's terrible radio. All right. Javier, that was a fun one, man. I learned some things talking to Chris and Kyle. But that said, we're not done.
We are not. Who's up next, Mr. Elliot Lane?
We are bringing on the CFO of Union Chill, Ryan O'Keefe. Let's bring him on over. Welcome, Ryan. Welcome.
How are you? He was great. Good to see you guys. Really, really enjoying your show. You guys are phenomenal.
Thanks, man. Glad to have you on.
Is this a real surname, or did you change it to be more, cannabis friendly?
No, that's it. Born and bred, Ryan.
Born to be in the space is what I'll say. All right, so Ryan, Union Chill. It's a company that I came upon this year, and I've heard a lot about. Since I first heard about Union Chill, but give us a sense, what you're up to, you know, how fast you're growing, where you're set, and how long you've been around.
So yeah, Union Chill is the creation of myself and Laurie McHugh. She was our CEO who passed recently, tragically and unexpectedly. But about 2 years ago, we've been friends for years, and Laurie was just a phenomenal spirit. We're doing what we can to keep her legacy alive here. But she had some serious medical issues throughout her life, from rheumatoid arthritis to stage 4 cancer. And she really saw relief from CBD and cannabis. And she really believed in the market and its ability to help and change lives. So about 2 years ago, we found a location. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Lambertville, New Jersey, but it's a Delaware River town. It's about an hour from New York, an hour from... north of New York, an hour south of Philly.
Nice.
It's a great fall town, right along the river, artisan town. It's a great community theater. And we're just hyper-local. We think globally, but we're hyper-local. And we just want to give the folks around here education, employment, and access to some great cannabis.
I want to come back to the hyper-local part of that, but... Yeah, you know, do you find acceptance in these kind of small towns of New Jersey? It seems like New Jersey was very like municipality like focused and driven. Has yours steered into the skid there?
Yeah, Lambertville has been great. You know, obviously the tax revenue for the town is significant, but they've been great partners throughout. You know, the referendum in New Jersey was overwhelmingly supportive in Lambertville. So the mayor's been phenomenal. The council's been phenomenal. So no, they're behind us, and the community's behind us. I mean, everyone who works for us is in the community, both their families and themselves, from both a cannabis standpoint, but then also just as a civic responsibility standpoint.
I am very curious on this like small town approach, right? And I have two questions for you. One is, what kind of impact have you seen from Union Chill at Lambertville, one, right? And the other one, and for reference, for those who don't know, Lambertville has maybe, 5,000, 6,000 people living there? Is it a little bit bigger? You know, it's or maybe 10,000?
It's a smaller town. I would say you're spot on there. But it's a river town. It's a tourist destination. They bring in some phenomenal crowds, all year long, but predominantly in the fall. Lambertville is known as a Halloween town.
Oh, cool.
I mean, you guys really, if you're looking for something, this is the place to be for Halloween. It's just the whole community gets out. The decorations are outstanding. And, It's and I grew up in the area. It's just a special place to be. I'd love to have you guys out if you're ever in the area.
Love to.
Just a fun town.
And we'll be in New York in about a month for our fintech and digital assets conferences. Maybe we'll have to take a quick trip over.
Here's
my question, actually. One is, like, what has been the impact to the local economy? And two, I mean, you kind of answered this already with the tourist part, but, like, what are the economics of a cannabis company in a very small town, right? Does it work?
Yeah, you know what? The nice thing is, and you mentioned before the municipality pushback in New Jersey. So Lambertville, we're the only dispensary in the county. And our closest competitors is over, 25 minutes away. And they're mainly the MSOs that have been there. We see it as a community, so we have a great respect for them. But we provide, I think, different options for our town. So, yeah, we're probably getting on a good weekend 300 people come through in a single day. We're excited for the numbers. We're excited for the growth. We're 4 months, I think, last week. We're seeing since day one, we're seeing 25% to 35% growth month over month. So
wow, phenomenal, man! Congrats. Yeah. That's great. And CFO would have that number. Brian, thank you for this number. Population 4,149 as of 2021 census there. Thank you, Brian. So I got a question for you. It's slightly bridging to my next question, but there's a lot of talk in the LinkedIn cannabis community, really about the passion for the plant, the culture of the plant, right? So from a retailer's perspective, right, you all are doing this because cannabis brings wellness, it brings relief, it brings a sense of social connection, in a way that's safer than alcohol and safer than others. But when looking at the culture of the plant, and then you look at the culture of a 4,100 person town, how do you mesh those? How do you bring those together in an outlet and a brick and mortar like Union Chill?
I think we're trying to bring education on the crop to the town and to our guests. A lot of them have a lot of expertise of a certain area, but they might not be familiar with all of the products we offer. So I think, and whether it's the health benefit, the social benefit, I think just bringing in our partners from a vendor standpoint, having them educate and there's really just such a pride in the product and the crop and just getting that feeling of pride and taste and to the end consumers is what we're about. And I think having them taste different options, is something that brings excitement for them. More excitement from our vendors because there's such great pride in what they supply. So I would say, I think educating the consumer, the options that they have and the uses for it, both from a PTSD, from a, again, to all the way to social is just key. And we've been getting a great response. So it's more of my day to day now with Laurie gone. But she was really our driving force and the one whose legacy we're trying to just keep going here.
Absolutely. And then kind of looking at this from more of a technical sense, right? That culture side is really the reason why. But looking in the how, I would imagine that type of numbers game and growth, falls a lot into your lane in terms of the economics mm-hmm. that Javier was speaking to before. What's next? You're saying 30% growth month over month. What is next for the business when it comes to the growth of Union Chill?
Well, we're always looking at opportunities elsewhere within New Jersey with the recent legislation allowing a retailer to partner, with a disabled vet or a female owned or minority owned up to 35% at 7 locations. It's something we're currently actively pursuing in towns such as Atlantic City and Asbury Park. We're partnering with folks in Corning, New York. We had a card application, but with that lawsuit, it kind of We're resubmitting. We're resubmitting next week for a dispensary where we have site control in Corning, New York.
Oh, cool.
So, and then we, you know, we look as states continue, and as you were talking earlier with the SAFER and the descheduling, with the rescheduling, you know, it opens up a lot, and we are permitted to vertically integrate, so we're always talking to our vendors about establishing, you know, our own products and our own crops to offer to our clients as well, based upon the knowledge they're getting from us from our current suppliers. So we have we have a great team, and we're looking at a few areas in state, and then of course New York is what we're putting in shortly with site control up in Corning.
Nice. You know, you've been talking about Laurie quite a bit, and I know for her, one of the key aspects here related to corporate social responsibility, community engagement, inclusivity, right? And she had a few pillars that were particularly important to her for a company, right? Indigenous land acknowledgement, general inclusion, empowerment of BIPOC and LGBTQI plus communities, veterans, formerly incarcerated. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what initiatives are still in place on that front, what you're doing there, and also what you're doing to drive, your team members, your employees to thrive, which I know was another, you know, fundamental aspect for Laurie, and you know, I hope it still is for the company.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question, Javier. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Laurie wanted to create an environment where we paid a decent wage, we provided benefits and an opportunity to grow with Union Chill, where Union Chill's employees match the community, you know, with aspects from all areas. You know, we're kind of excited now. You know, we continue to be focused and serious about our corporate responsibility with both the Indigenous cultures and the LGBTQ. We actually are just about to launch, I believe, the first cannabis-specific scholarship at Stockton in Laurie's name, which will go for those who are having financial hardships and maybe have that social equity or past criminal due to cannabis arcane laws. So we're trying to keep that message and getting to those groups and the benefit of the recent legislation and the new opportunities that they face, where, you know, 5 years ago, it would have just continued to ruin lives.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you're building an amazing company that Laurie would be proud of, Ryan. So, you know, I think what we've heard today is proof of that. So last but not least, you know, is there anything about Union Chill that, you know, is particularly unique, is particularly like you want people to walk out of your store remembering this one item about Union Chill?
I think it's just comfort. I think when you step in the door, I think you feel it right away. There's just there's a chill atmosphere, and you know, the relationships between our customers and our bud tenders are just amazing. They transcend the store, you know, where they'll talk beyond about new product, new things going on. And really it's just, we're trying to extend the community beyond the store, based upon the feel of in store, the chill, the common respect. You know, everyone's just trying to get by, and, you know, we all face hard times. And if you could just be a little kinder and a little more quick to listen and to learn, it just goes a long way for everyone. So that's what we're trying to instill. And I think if you, hopefully when you guys come in a month or so, when you're up in New York, I think I'm hoping you'll feel it as soon as you walk in, because it really is a welcoming open space, and one where we just hope everyone feels safe and comfortable to figure out, you know, what's next.
Well, I can attest to you being the chillest CFO I've spoken to. So, I mean, you're definitely taking your own medicine, it seems.
That's a good thing from Javi. Yeah. Hey, you know, Ryan, I do have one more question. What is the town's favorite product at your store?
I definitely flower is the most consumed item. We're excited about getting some new glassware in to to utilize with your favorite flower. And then after that, you know, vapes are probably second best, but flower is still our number one, our old school. It's something I look forward to showing off to you guys soon.
Hey, do it the old school way. Absolutely, Ryan.
Yeah.
Really appreciate your time, you being with us today. You know, look forward to continuing following your story and the growth of Union Chill. And we'll definitely be there soon. But Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today.
You guys are fantastic. I love you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ryan. We'll talk to you soon. All right. What a cool CFO. You're right about that, Javi. We've interviewed some CFOs on our show, and I think they need to go to Ryan O'Keefe's school.
To be fair, Benzinga CFO Robert, who has Brazilian roots, is also very chill.
Well, I think Robert would probably go to Union Chill in a heartbeat.
We don't know.
It's all assumption. I think he'd be okay with us saying, though. But all that said, thank you, Javi, for being awesome as always. Thank you, Brian, Liliana, Tony, and the chat. Appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll be back on Tuesday for another round of great interviews. We'll have Morgan Paxia back with us from Poseidon.
We'll chat about to call him Morgan Poseidon.
I was 100% about to call him Morgan Poseidon. 100%. You caught me there. All right, Charles, thank you.
And like Emily Midas.
Trust the Midas touch. All right, Javi, Aaron, Malia, thank you all backstage for all your help. Thank you for being on here, Javi. And thanks to our guests, Ryan, Chris, and Kyle. We'll see you guys again Tuesday. Have a phenomenal rest of your week.
Boom.
Peace.